Welcome back, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to This Moment, your transatlantic bridge between Stockholm, Sweden and Harlem, USA, with myself, Jason Diakite, a.k.a. Timbuktu, and my dear brother and co-host with the absolute co-most, Chef Marcus Samuelson. How you doing, Marcus?
I'm doing good. You know, it's I was looking forward to talk to you just to catch up. And it's always exciting, you know, in between those weeks when we get a chance to talk, because there's always some of the stuff that we talked about when that comes into fruition. Sometimes it's super light and sometimes it's heavier, but it's always interesting. I'm like, oh, I can't wait to talk to Jason about it. But something that we discussed here at length, Zlatan, of course, and now at 39, he's coming back to the national team, which I think it could be very interesting, and see how the team's going to react on that.
The team qualified for the Euro.
I
saw him in the newspaper today. It's like Zlatan's back in Stockholm. It's like, oh shit, I better keep a low profile, because if he sees me and he hears I've been talking shit about him on the podcast, like, I gotta watch the hell out, man. No, but seriously, that's huge.
About
it. No, I didn't. But you know, I think it's still huge that he could come back at 39, step back into the national team.
Oh, I see what you do now. You're trying to back.
It's like, yeah. I heard you in town, Z. You know, we still love you. So, Marcus, what have you been reading about in the news lately?
Well, it's a lot, you know. Obviously, on the U.S. border, or the southern border, there's a lot of stuff going on there. And the Biden administration are navigating through it. It is not easy. And then, for me, the biggest news was, you know, what we discussed as hate crime or not in this country, right? There was a shooting in Atlanta that this guy shot up Asian massage parlors, and the way the police captain discussed it, he just was casually saying, oh, this guy had a bad day, and this is what happened when he had a bad
day.
That.
Yeah.
I mean, and this, we've seen this example of justification of when young white male pick up a gun, rifle, shoot up people. It's always sort of talked about in a way of, yeah, the boy just had a bad day, or we remember this from the killings in the Carolina churches. We remember this, what happened in Wisconsin, right? It's constantly this, like when a young white male is out there and really killing and hurting innocent people. It's talking about
I forget his name, and I don't want to remember it, but the young man who killed two people in Milwaukee, was it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Same
yeah.
thing there, you know, sure. the way he was treated by police, given water, etc. So, yeah.
And this is something, and so the discussion then gets around, was this a hate crime?
Oh, no doubt about it.
Or not?
No doubt about it.
Or was it, and then...
This is anti-Asian, point, anti-Asian, you know, anti-Asian violence.
Sure. But I mean, the police captain says, oh, no, it wasn't a hate crime, because he said he had a sex addiction. First of all, why would you take the word of someone who just killed eight people, right? The first thing you should do is show empathy to the families that just lost one, right? Rather than be so quick on taking the word of a killer.
Like his narrative, right? And so his narrative of what happened becomes the police reality. It's ridiculous.
You know, and that's my whole point, because it's like all of a sudden you're giving this killer a huge platform, and his narrative gets out there, which now, you know, we all know what this is fueled from, right? When you're from the highest pulpit been saying stuff like the virus came from this country, or the calling it the martial arts virus, whatever the hate has.
Well, we know where it comes from. Kung flu, China virus. We know where this comes from.
All of that stuff.
We know what this is a result of, you know.
Yeah, and then people can interpret that. And so it was just fascinating to me where the police officers are just like standing there and saying, oh, the narrative of the killer is now more important than the empathy shown
to the victims,
to the families.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and it's
no,
just
but Marcus, you know, I've been, you know, in Sweden as well. I've been around many you know, in many a situation and many a conversation over this past year, the year of the pandemic, where people are like, oh, well, you know, the Chinese and the way they, the way their markets, the way their wet markets work, and more or less kind of saying, well, if they were more civilized, you know, and less savage, then, you know, blaming China for the entire pandemic is, and it, you know, it's a hard one to pick up, but it's definitely something that I've heard echoed from a lot of places. And then what happened in Atlanta is obviously the most and most gruesome violence that type of sentiment has resulted in. But we've seen a lot of, there's been a lot of incidents of anti-Asian violence going on and then kind of culminating in what happened in Atlanta.
Oh, it's been going up with hundreds and hundreds of percent, and it's horrible, you know. And there's videos of this, and this comes from all aspects. I mean, I called up. I mean, I have a bunch of great chefs that are from the Asian American community, just to mention a few. Actually, Kristen Kirsch is an amazing chef. She would like to, you know, she's going to come on this moment and break it down for you and me and for our listeners what this year have meant and so on. Another friend of mine, Ming Tsai, and I, we talked the next day just to not only to show solidarity, but actually to talk, see how you're doing. You
know what I mean? I spoke to my friend, my dear friend, Trisha Wong, and I'll be inviting her on to this moment also. But I just spoke to her briefly on the phone, and she said, you know what? And her partners, my other dear friend, Kenyatta Cheese, is Chinese African American. She said, you know, when something happens in the African American community and there's racist violence, you know, he gets a lot of condolence or not condolences, but you know, people reach out and say, "Yo, this is crazy. Yeah. I heard this has happened." And she was really like, you know, surprised how few people had kind of reached out or just like offered a sympathetic hand. So I think it's dope that you've called people in your network and just been like, yeah, you know, standing in solidarity with each other.
Yeah,
even when it's across, because this is like, it's really interesting. Okay, Marcus. So I was with my friend, who's a Chinese American, and you know, when I was living in New York, I'd go, like, the Rooster was my second home. It was my living room, as you know. I'd be in Harlem all the time. And so I was talking to my friend, and he was from Brooklyn, and he said, yeah, I've never really been, you know, out in Harlem. And I was like, what? You kidding? I mean, you're from New York. How can you not have been out in Harlem? So, you know, obviously invited him. We went to the Rooster, a gang of us had dinner. And then afterwards, we walked up, you know, 125th, and then went up Adam Clayton Powell, because I said, let's go to, first we went to Paris Blues, and then we walked up to the Shrine.
Nice.
And, you know, I just noticed along the course of the evening that he was getting, you know, comments, nothing aggressive, but, you know, we walked into one place and the doorman's like, it's like, hey, where's your sword? You know, another place they were like, what's up, Bruce Lee? You know, that, wow. You know, small things that I was like,
yeah, microaggressions.
Yeah, microaggressions. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's not only coming from white people, but also from, you know, just people in general who aren't Asian.
But it's all about, and I think that we have to learn how do we build sort of solidarity outside the communities that definitely don't look like ours.
True.
Because the core of those hate crimes or violent acts are the same, right? And it's about installing fear. It's installing something that we got superiority over you. And, you know, that can be crushed with many different
ways. I totally agree, Marcus. I totally agree. And I also think that we have to insert ourselves into the reality and the world we live in, where we gladly and happily consume cultures, you know, whether it be food, music, from across the board, right, globally. But to remember to also stand in solidarity with those communities that we're you know, eating from or listening to, you know. And as you know, I've talked about it before on the podcast, you know, last year I was had kind of a wake up call when I saw how many of my fellow people in the Swedish hip hop community weren't really standing in solidarity with the uprising and with the movement. And that to me was a bit of a shock because I was like, whoa, but you built your livelihood. You learned all the skills of the trade from this culture, but you can't stand in solidarity with it when it needs you. And I put myself into that too in other aspects where I, you know, especially when it comes to food, because we so fluidly cross borders, right? And consume, like, you know, I love Chinese food, for example. But am I able to empathize and be in solidarity with Asian people when they're going through stuff? That's just one for me to remind myself of, basically.
Food is one of the best way to learn about a very local Asian conversation, right? Like a Japanese and a Chinese can have things that they share, but obviously very, very different in other aspects. The Thai and somewhere from Singapore or somebody from, let's say, India that is also Asian American can have completely different. So we're learning all that from this moment of solidarity to the Asian American community, to Asian, stop Asian hate anywhere. And we go from there.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm going to take this opportunity because, you know, well, this moment is basically our living room. It's our transatlantic bridge that we invite our listeners into. And so I'm just going to take an opportunity to throw a little dart out. You know, one of the absolute biggest TV shows in Sweden right now is called The Thin Blue Line. And it's a police show about Malmo, the city where I lived 10 years that I have a deep love for, which is also the most multicultural and I would say in a way integrated Swedish big city, because you have something very unique in Malmo, and that is an area called Möllevångstorget, which is basically a immigrant neighborhood with low rents in the center of town. And oh, you've been to Malmo, Marcus. You definitely know the difference. Yeah. How Malmo feels considerably more like if you're in Hamburg or Berlin than Gothenburg or Stockholm. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so this police show, and people love it. You know, it's gotten rave reviews, and you know, meeting a lot of people who really talk it up. And to me, I'm like, really, y'all like this? You know, I said it was so real. It's the reality level of it is so dope, and really all the, you know, 99% of the main characters are of course white. The writers, directors, all Swedish ethnic Swedes, and I just am taken aback of how, again, you know, immigrants who show up in the show are either criminals or they're crazy, and they don't get to have the same thing that you were saying that the police chief in Atlanta was saying about this man who murdered all these Asian women, humanizing him, right? Saying, oh, well, he just had a bad day, and giving him a story and a background and a reason and a humanistic, because we can all have a bad day, so it makes it relatable, and somebody who feels bad and so forth. And that's really one of the main bones I have to pick with this TV show, that all of the non-Europeans that show up in it are criminals or bad, and they never get that chance of an explanation, reasons, humanism, right? And that's a very kind of old way of portraying things. And then my second bone to pick with it, my second bone, I just got to throw it out there. There's no hip hop in the entire show. And I'm like, okay, that to me is just unreal. You can never portray the streets of Malmo without the sounds of the streets of Malmo, you know? Malmo is, it's the only true metropolitan melting pot of Sweden. If you walk down Ystadgatan, you have Laotian grocer, you have the Iranian grocer, you have the Vietnamese restaurant, the Syrian restaurant, you have the Iraqi espresso bar, the Chinese dumplings, but also, you know, it's the sounds of Beirut, of Baghdad, of Mosul, of Tehran, Ho Chi Minh City, of Addis Ababa, definitely Mogadishu is in the building, you know, of Dakar, of Accra, you know, it's just truly the one metropolitan melting pot of Sweden. And the soundtrack to all this is trap music, hip hop music from the United States. It's the number one thing, blasting from cars. Of course, you'll hear your famed Arabic singers pouring out of some big Benzes driving past, but you definitely out of the shops, out of the cars, you're hearing that 808s rumbling, just like you're on 125th or on 116th. You know, it's a place that I really, really love and have a lot of love for. It's a dynamic, creative, just powerhouse of a place. And that's why, to me, when you name a series The Thin Blue Line, when you portray the police force as innately and unproblematically good and well-intended, but upholding and fighting against the chaotic criminal society that they're forced to be in. And then on the other hand, all of the non-European lives that are portrayed are not, or they're not portraying non-European lives. They're just people doing crimes that don't have reasons for why, how they ended up there and why they do it. You know, that to me becomes a two-dimensional, unreal way of portraying reality. And as I said to my friend, the TV series The Thin Blue Line feels like somebody who's never been to Malmo goes to Malmo and writes a postcard to somebody else who's never been to Malmo, claiming to have experienced it. So, yeah, just a little detour I just wanted to take. That, anyway, let's...
That's definitely a detour. I'm not at all surprised that Sweden fell for it, and those cop shows that started in America in the 80s are basically on its way out because they were labeled racist. I'm not at all surprised that now being picked up in Sweden and getting, I mean, that title also, A Thin Blue Line, you know, it really, it's a blend between two titles, right? It's actually, there's an amazing Terrence Malick movie called A Thin Red Line, which is like absolutely amazing. But then also, of course, The Blue Line, it's obviously a play of the American words in terms of how police officers sort of identify the blue wall or the blue line,
implying that the police are the kind of membrane between civilization and chaos, you know, upholding civilization. Mm-hmm. And the expression, the Thin Red Line, actually comes from the Crimean War, where the Brits held off the Russians, and the Brits in their red uniforms formed the thin red line that, you know, held the big bad East from kicking the butt of the West. So it really speaks to something that, we could talk more about this. You know, I have a lot to say on this, but it's just a short little detour. I'm not going to take it further right now. Everyone who's a fan of the Thin Blue Line can email the show, you know, email us, let us know what you think. We're open for it. It's controversy season now.
So on a positive, more exciting news, I just want to give a shout out to Elaine Bosak, Elaine Bosak.
One of our number one fans. And I know that this,
do we need to do some clearance on who Elaine Bosak is?
Elaine Bosak is my dear, sweet mother. I love you, Mom. Thank you for always listening to the show. I mean, she always calls she'll call me tomorrow when the episode is posted. Like, boom, I heard the episode. I loved it. Like, give me feedback straight, you know. Life feedback. Is more, life is less, you know, but she's always there. Boom. It's we're a part of her, her, you know, podcast diet.
She talks about how during the COVID, she's been listening a lot to, podcast as a way for her to stay up on news and so on. She listened to This Moment, Scene on Radio. She listened to just various different platforms between America and Sweden. And she also talks a lot about Jason, power to music and the spoken and written word. Keep on keeping on. Love from Lund. And that word, keep on keeping on, that's kind of like a 60s or a 70s shout out that you don't hear that often. And I love that. I just love that part. We love to hear from you,
the listeners.
You also, Marcus,
of course, have a special place in her heart. You know, let me just share with the listeners that Marcus Samuelson, you know, the world famous chef has not been to Lund very many times. And the last time, you know, chef was in Lund, I wasn't there. So if I were there, I could, you know, take you around and so forth. That was okay. I didn't even know, Marcus, that you were going there. I think I was in New York at the time. My mom knew.
Yeah.
So my mom comes down to the bookstore where Marcus is doing his talk and basically, well, you know, raised her hand and I'm like, I'm Jason's mom. And said, come. And after you were done with your signing, was like, come on, Marcus. Took you to her favorite coffee shop. I'm sure introduced you to some people along the way. Took on that ambassadorship or hostship of the unofficial mayor of Lund, and then she called me and she's like, yeah, Marcus was here. We went around. I introduced him, and I'm like, that's beautiful, Mom. Beautiful. So,
I'll tell you, you know what? There's so much more to that. She not only was she active in the book session, she literally took me to four or five of her favorite spots. Yeah. But not only that, in every place, you can tell that she's been there many, many times before because it was greetings. And this is my point about that she lives a full life. Maybe the youngest person she greeted was 19 or 20, definitely a student. And the oldest, maybe 70, 75. And everywhere we went, she had numerous interaction with this person. And I just like, wow, she's living a full life, right? And she just made that, you know how it is. You come to a town, you do your thing, and then you either got to get back or maybe you stay over. I didn't stay over. I went back to Malmö. And she just completely, and we have this great selfie we took together because it was just like, it's a great memory. And, you know, for me, it's like, you could clearly tell, like, she's curious, she's talking to people, she's passionate about, there was somebody that raised money for a bookstore, she was part of that. There was somebody that wanted to keep a cafe going, she was part of that. So for me, it's like, she just, her curiosity feeds her.
Just on the end, Marcus, if you can find that selfie, we got to post it to our This Moment Instagram. Because I haven't seen it, I got to check that out.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Obviously, COVID taught us many things. And I'm just going to tell you a little bit here, Jason, how it was for me. I was really, really scared in the beginning to how do I keep feeding my creativity? I didn't even know, does COVID now mean that I got to stop cooking? And for me, it was really important to figure out how do I stay creative. And I just wanted for us to go back and forth a little bit about, Jason, did you keep writing during COVID? I know you're going to come out with an album. So I guess, was it different for you to make an album during COVID?
You know what, Marcus? I think there's a similar link between us. So during 2020, my dear friends Colleen and Cords and I, and my other friend, Jew Lamar, wrote and recorded an album together. But even before that, what led me to that was, as you know, and I've spoken about before and spoken to you about it, was that when COVID, the great, disruptor, was a fact in my life, and, instead of spending last spring in New York doing a drop of Midnight Live at Harlem Stage, and taking that on the road to San Francisco and DC, Chicago, LA, I came back to Sweden. And that's a beautiful thing. I had a home to go to, a family here. But as far as what I was going to do with my time, I was at a loss. There was nothing. I was empty. I was mourning, I was mourning plans that never happened, plans that I had been making and meticulously kind of aiming for and putting my energy into for a year and a half. And it just, boom, like that. Over the course of 36 hours, it was gone. And it took me back to when I was 14, 15, 16, 17. What would I do then after school? I'd write a verse. I'd write a verse every day from I was 14 till I was probably about, 29, more or less. After 25, maybe, of course, after 25, 26, I wasn't writing every day, but more or less there was no week that would go by without me at least writing one song, you know. But then as I got older, I was doing more other things, you know. My last album came out 2014, and then I released my first book, my only kind of long book. I've done a few other books, but in 2016, and I was away from the mic. I was away from the pen and pad, you know. And this brought me back to my core creative outlet, which is writing rap verses, writing rhymes, rhymes about sorrow, about happiness, about anger, about standing in line at the pharmacy, about trying to cook a meal that I'm failing with, about, you know, trying to get my daughter to get dressed, or whatever is happening in my life. I rhyme about it. That's the core of my creative being. And COVID took me back to that. And that's what then led me back into the studio to record the album. And what I'm speculating on is, you know, Marcus, you're one of the most busy men, busy people I know. I know you probably don't have the same amount of time to, I imagine your core creative being is being in the kitchen. Even when you're off the line and when you're done, you know, staying in the kitchen, inventing new recipes, trying new emulsions, trying new, you know, dishes, working on your craft and trade. But then as time goes by, of course, you're adding on to your reach, and your horizon is bigger and bigger. So we don't have as much time to spend in me in the booth and you on the line, I imagine it.
Yeah, but I mean, for me, the core of being a chef, right? For me, it actually starts with that balance between pen and paper. You got to write food, you got to think about food, then you got to go out and learn the craft to execute on it, and then you go. So just like a painter, it's very it's a singular craft that then becomes a team craft, right? But it really starts with that idea, and I think when COVID hit, I was worried that how do I now craft that idea? How do I manifest that idea? These things that I fell in love with, right? The balance between sweet, salt, sour, bitter, heat, umami, and all of the different flavor combinations that we can, how do we experience it? Through aesthetics, through texture, through fragrance, right? Like I devoted my whole life about those pillars, but also then through the great people that I collaborate with. And because this very thing was that we had to stay away from one another, would I just cook for my family? So I started there, right?
And when you cook for your family,
for 4 months,
what kind of weekday, you know, dinner or whatever look like? Is it Ethiopian mostly, or is it, how do you, do you open the fridge and see what's there?
That's
a lot of times what I do, you know.
Yeah, it could be, but it's more also, I mean, just like you said, you were rhyming about waiting online and you were writing on very mundane everyday things. Same thing was for me. I was standing in a line waiting 1 hour to get into the store. And of course, which we have to accept, it's Harlem, so no deliveries were accepted, right? So we had to go there, right? Just that idea that we have to accept that no deliveries. Okay. That 1 hour, I was thinking about my grandmother a lot. And then it was that moment we decided to be vegetarian forward for the next 6 months. Because I'm like, there's no way I'm going to wait an hour in the store to get into the store and then also be in the store to wait another 45 minutes on the protein line, right? So not looking at that as negative, but really looking at that, okay, here's an opportunity. So my everyday cooking for my family then was to maybe go beyond pasta and roasted vegetables for a vegetarian dish, you know, go deeper in maybe fonio, things like that. Like, of course, quinoa has been part of it and couscous, but go a little bit deeper on certain grains in certain ways. But there are also other techniques, whole roast vegetables, treat them like fish, treat them like meat. So thinking about that, and then once you do this, asking the same questions, Where does the fat come from? What is this texture? How does this impact this meal?
Where does the umami come from?
Right?
Where is umami in vegetables, right? You know? Yeah, but yes. Tell me, did mushrooms? And nowadays, I'll take, like, we spend a lot of time picking mushrooms, as you know, in Sweden, and we spend the fall in the forest every weekend picking mushrooms. My dad thinks it's insanity, by the way. He has one of his friends from the Caribbean who was invited to some Swedish people for dinner and got really sick from eating some mushrooms that they had picked. And ever since just hearing that story, my dad doesn't eat mushrooms at all. So he thinks I'm crazy for eating mushrooms. But anyway, just drying them and like crushing them in the mortar and then putting it into sauces just to get, you know, some of that magnificent flavor that you can get from mushrooms. But what did any like inspiration for new dishes come out of that? Did that take you back to your core is what what I'm getting at.
I mean, we have, especially in Red Rooster, Miami, I would say 30-40% of the menu is vegetarian forward. And when I say vegetarian forward, there might be meat and fish in there, but more to support the vegetables versus before it was main protein, 5 to 7 ounces, and then there was vegetable to support the main
entree. So like doing a butternut squash, but then sprinkling bonito on it just to get the extra kick more than
exactly.
So it being a...
Yeah.
The featuring artist, but not the main artist. Yeah.
And then there's just thought process on all of that, right? And the writing the food, the thinking about the food, but also then how do we advance the craftsmanship of it? Thinking about non-dairy-based butter, using that more, thinking through fermentation, thinking through pickling,
preserving. Definitely, I see that. Because if you're not going to get fresh veggies every day, so how can you get them to keep? How can you get those carrots to keep, you know?
And how can you keep something after a season, for example? You know, we had a lot of, you know, you have great tomato season in, you know, and it's basically in September, first week of October in New York. But then, you know, if you sun dry, if you oven dry them or if you pickle them, you can have great tomatoes in a beautiful quinoa, for example, in January, if you preserve them. So just thinking about things like this. But for me, you know, for me, it was more about the fear of having the creativity being the platform of our creativity being taken away. And of course, you can't take away creativity. You just have to go elsewhere. But those first months, that probably what I manifested my fear in. Once I got on the other side of that come July or something like that. It was not a financial, we made it. It was like creative, big sigh of relief of saying, okay, there is an audience on the other side. We can now bring people to it. Once I had that, I was
that
good.
Took you to the rise too.
I was more, it did, but it's a different medium. It was a writing medium only, but I felt so much fear of losing that. That was my big, and it kept me up at night. And then when you don't sleep right, now your day is not right. So I'm just saying from a creative, and we obviously work with our creativity differently and it sometimes interact, but you know, COVID, once you start collaborating, like 4 of my chefs have had COVID, right? We now have the protocol. One chef has it, stay home 2 weeks, get tested again, they're in. But that, those were things that the only way to work through that was actually to learn about them, right? And each time it's a shock because we feel like we're doing all the, we don't crowd the kitchen, we have less menu items on, but every time it happens, it's, damn, how could this happen? But obviously we can't control the chef's life completely because when they're out of the kitchen, maybe they go and meet another person and maybe they caught it from somewhere else, right? But these are the type of things that, and even for you, Jason, right? Before when you were in the studio, maybe you were like 5, 8, 10 guys in the studio at the same time. What, did anything change for you in making music?
Before I answer that question, I just want to say, Marcus, that for me, and this is probably a menu from Red Rooster from about 2, maybe 3 years ago. But there was I don't even know if it was an all-out app or it was just like a you know, one of the small dishes, like some kind special, of special.
Yeah.
But there was a dish on there that I saw it. I didn't order it because I'm not a super big fan of gravlax, but I just saw it. And to me, you, that dish is so you and so uniquely you. And it was gravlax on injera, served on 125th and Lenox. And that is like, that's Gothenburg, it's Addis, and it's Harlem in one dish. And it's not even, it's just like a, it's not even the main instrument. It's a little side, you know. Exactly. It's a little side thing.
It's also the sweet yolk.
Yeah, exactly. And I just love that because I saw it and I was like smiling and like pointing out to the people I'm with. I'm like, this is only Marcus would think about doing this, can do this, and has done it. You know, boom. Now you have gravlax on an injera in Harlem. How do you, what leads you to, like, how do you get your ideas, basically? And,
narrative is important. So I would say 50% of the menu of Red Rooster is driven from the migration. So it's a cuisine that I did not grow up with, but the great migration from the southern states and the black southerners coming up north, that is 50%. Then I would say the other 50 is really immigrant driven, right? Because I look east of me, of us, right? You have Spanish Harlem that was, and beyond Spanish Harlem, you had Finnish Harlem, Jewish Harlem, Italian Harlem. So once you start to look at the landscape of the immigration to Harlem, being Swedopian in Harlem, I'm just following the footsteps of other immigrants. So for me, 50% should be definitely in the African-American experience, South Carolina, Virginia, coming up north. And the other 50 should really be about an immigrant experience in Harlem. So that's really, once that is set, I draw my inspiration from that.
And, but do you find yourself, do you find yourself like on those nights where you can't sleep, going down into your family's kitchen and like starting to just experiment with stuff as a therapy, but it just to create, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I run into ingredients constantly that are obviously not new ingredients, but they're new to me. And I'll tell you an example. Let's say that there's an ingredient that's becoming popular as a superfood, but it's been in the Caribbean forever. It's called sea moss, right? Yeah. So very often it's in a juice or something like that, but it's also it's a thickener. So if I then want to do a dish, let's say, I'm just saying, butter poached lobster. Now I want to think forward. I don't want to poach in regular dairy-based butter. So maybe I start thinking about this in a plant-based butter. But still the butter, I want it to be like Ethiopian kibbeh.
Spiced butter.
Right, which is the spiced butter out of Ethiopia.
Ghee,
so I go and get...
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, basically Ethiopian ghee. So now I have a plant-based butter that I poached the lobster in. And I have the spices like an Ethiopian kibbeh. And then my sauce now would be based on lobster stock thickened with sea moss, right? So now we have that. And then maybe then I'll do some pearls of slow roasted, toasted quinoa just for crunch, right? And I want to create them like popcorn because that would be a pop and a texture rice that would be pretty interesting, right? And then maybe we'll serve them with, let's say, another veggie that would be, or something that would be really crisp and ripe. So let's say I would take Persian cucumber, I would salt them the way we salt gravlax, add berbere, into that, and maybe just a hint of toasted coconut seeds, coconut flakes, just to get the Caribbean sort of tying around it, and boom, we have a dish, right? And that, so that's kind of like...
And this has to happen after hours or before you open, like this kind of, like building new... Yeah,
But that dish, I would actually start with my older sister, Anna, because she's half Jamaican, half Swedish. So the lobster would be the Swedish reference. The Caribbean, the Jamaican reference would be all moss, from her coconut, side. Yeah. And maybe it would be like
Ethiopia,
and go there. And the burger. Right? Yeah.
And it's all in there. That's what I mean. It's all the fibers are in there. See, also when you do that, Marcus, that's only happened like once or twice. It was around Thanksgiving last time. When you start going off talking about ingredients and how you treat, to me, that's like you're rapping, you know? You're spitting your thing, you know? It's like when we talk about music, you know, and I remember when I was a kid and I got to hang out with ADL, who's the greatest MC to ever come out of Scandinavia, and come backstage with him after a gig and or before a gig. And then he invited me on, and I could, you know, I could rap, but I wasn't on his level. And he's there with Stone Funkers, like one of the big bands in Sweden. Mm-hmm. And he's like, come on in, do your thing. And he knew I wasn't ready, but he knew I was a student, you know, I was hungry. I wanted to be, I made sure I was there in where this could happen to me. And he saw it and rewarded that, you know, and it's really that kind of mentorship. And it's such a beautiful thing. And you know, I just felt, I felt a bond with Joel when he was speaking about you from that food perspective, as the same way I speak about what I saw ADL do on stage and in, you know, on record in 1992, 1993. It's, the knowledge of what I do comes from, that's where it comes from. That's where it started. That's a source. I was there because I wanted to. I was eager to get that knowledge, learn the skill, but I didn't yet have it. But somebody saw it and said, come with me. I'll give you a minute. But you know, when you get that minute, you have to deliver. Like, you fuck up, you might not get that minute again, you know?
Can I ask you about this album, though? Because of COVID, was there practices that you had to change? Because you couldn't just be in the same room.
Because nobody wanted to even be in the studio. Like, Jens didn't want me to. Of course, didn't want to have people in the studio. He didn't know. Like, you know, we weren't supposed to be doing it. We weren't supposed to be getting together. So that's why all I could do was write raps in my office where I am right now, and then record them and put them out on Instagram. Mm-hmm. But that brought me back to my student days, you know, trying to get on ADL's mic days. You know. And just a little, well, a huge shout out to my brother ADL. He's also the person who's been posting a lot about CMOS lately. So that's how I even know about it. Yeah. So he's still schooling me. And so it's interesting you're bringing it up. But so that was one practice, but also obviously we delayed releasing it because of the pandemic, right? So the album was more or less done in June, you know, but we couldn't release it. So then it's, you know, it's hard to just let that kind of, you know, to leave that June 2020, or maybe say August it was done, like leave that August, don't touch it until it's time to release. So obviously I've touched it. I've, you know, we've redone stuff. I've added on stuff. So, you know, because I couldn't just let it, like, it doesn't just go into a compartment where I don't touch it for those months before it's released. And then I speak to a label last fall and they're like, well, the pandemic, la, la, la. They're like, we see a good release date for this August 2021. And of course, you know, in my mind, I'm like, guys, that's so far off. Like, this is, you know, this is a fresh, this is a,
it's milk. It'll
be, exactly, it's milk. This is past due. It'll be sour milk by then. They're like, don't worry. It's just, you know, and I know I've got experience. I've done so many albums. It's always like this. It's been a while, but yet and still, I still have that, you know, that feeling. So Chords and I are going into the studio, you know, tomorrow. To record a new track that we're working on. So it's still kind of messing with it, you know, twisting it. Now I would say we get together. We've been the most four people in the studio. Yeah. But at the same time, the reality of it is that people are still getting sick here. You know, it actually came back. Now it's happening again to people in my kind of, to my friends. You know, November was really bad. Almost every other conversation, somebody either had it or their partner had it or their mom had it or their brother or sister had it. And now it's kind of coming back to that, you know. So we're not out of the woods. No way.
No, I loved hearing that you talk about your creativity and going back to Stonefunkers. And, you know, I can't believe you talking about Stonefunkers and don't give a shout out to Gothenburg City. But that's okay. That's okay, bro.
I mean, I'm talking about Stonefunkers, that is a shout out to Gothenburg City. You know, that is a shout out to Gothenburg City. No doubt.
But as we as we're wrapping up here, two things. Our guy, Fantastic Negrito, did it again. Yep. Mm-hmm. Won a Grammy again.
Big up, Xavier. Big up.
So, and it shows that originality and creativity. When I think about Fantastic, I always think about his originality and our conversation that we had on. And so I was really nervous and saw that he won, was really, really excited. And a couple of great musicians have decided to come on, and we're going to have some great conversations down the road with an amazing musician that you know well, Robert Glasper, and he also won a Grammy. Mm-hmm. So he's coming on that we were very, very excited about. But the last one that I just like sort of like just got a text as we were speaking.
Oh, no, no, no.
And I just was like, okay, I can't wait. I can't wait to tell Jason. So big up. We're going to have the enormous pleasure to bring on this moment. Mr. Rastaman himself, Ziggy Marley.
Wow.
So get your Rastafari question on, man, because come correct, because Ziggy is coming on this moment.
That is beautiful, Marcus. That is beautiful.
Yo. I got to run. I got to pick up time, brother. So I got to go. Zion ain't waiting.
Take care, brother. Peace.
Take care, peace.
Take care, brother.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.